Welcome to Today's Issues. Join us for the next hour as we offer a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And welcome to Today's Issues. It is Wednesday, August 7th, 2019, spinning by right through your fingers, folks. In fact, I gotta ask Brent Creeley to find out how many shopping days we have until Christmas, because I gotta say I'm getting a little concerned. I need to get with my wife and we need to get our list together, because I mean we're gonna have to do our shopping any day now. It's August. Fred Jackson, Cracker Barrel's probably got their Christmas stuff already out.
Yeah, that and Hobby Lobby, I know for sure.
Yeah.
They're all ready for Christmas.
All right, Brent, how many days?
140 days.
140 days. Folks, do not wait till the last minute.
That's right.
It doesn't matter how hot it is outside. It is time to get busy with your Christmas shopping.
And next week, Ed will publicize your wish list for the
yes.
listeners.
Oh, I like that.
Here's what you can get
I like
for
that.
Christmas.
All right. All right.
I'm dreaming of an Ed Christmas.
Yeah. You kind of hear some heavy breathing there over the phone. That's Ray Pritchard, founder of Keep Believing Ministries, finally home from out teaching the Bible and at conferences during the summer. He's back in Kansas, right? Right.
That's right. And by the way, Ed, I'm down here in my it's not underground, but in my basement bunker, so to speak. And I'm looking over in the corner, and there's a whole bunch of Christmas stuff that I took down, but I never stored away. And my wife has been telling me, you need to put this in storage, but there's only 140 days left.
There
I
you
might
go.
As well leave it out.
There
right?
you go. You're welcome, America. All right. Listen, babe, before we get into the news of the day, I do want to apologize. At least one listener was offended yesterday. Sandy Rios did make a joke about Calvinists, and some of us laughed. And we do need to remember that all of us who are listening, and really all of us here at American Family Association and American Family Radio, we have Calvinists here, Reformed folks here, and in our listening audience, we meant no offense. We apologize if you were offended. And so that just kind of a little housekeeping. I said house cleaning yesterday. We didn't mean anything by it, folks. And we hope that if you were offended, you can forgive us. I think we made a joke about evangelism and, you know, the kind of things that Arminians and Calvinists have been throwing at each other for centuries now. And we did it here on the show. Well, actually, Sandy Rios did it. We
That's
can
right.
we
Where's
should blame Sandy,
when Sandy we need
but
her.
we did laugh at it. So anyway, folks, we didn't mean anything in a heartfelt way. It was just we thought we were just having good fun, but mea culpa for us. All right, now we do have a bunch of things going on. We do have next week, starting on Monday, National Truth for Youth Bible Week. But I will talk more about that after the first segment. So when we start back after the break at the bottom of the hour, I'll give folks more information about that. So, Fred, what do we've got news-wise to
All right.
discuss?
Well, just probably 10 minutes ago, President Trump and the First Lady arrived at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Dayton, Ohio. The President today will be spending a couple of hours in Dayton, being the President of the United States. With survivors, families, survivors of those who were killed in Dayton on early Sunday morning, and with first responders also. If you've seen the video, it was absolutely incredible how quickly the police ran towards the gunman there in Dayton.
Right. We talked about that on Monday.
Yeah.
We have to show respect to law enforcement in our country, because for the most part, mm-hmm. they run to the sound of gunfire while everyone yes. else is running away.
And they were able to take out that gunman very quickly. And after that, he's heading down to El Paso, Texas, where he will do much the same thing there. There were many more people killed there. He'll be meeting with again, family survivors, perhaps a visit to one of the hospitals where some of the wounded have been taken and are still recovering. Now, the story that you're the focus, I will put it, a lot of the mainstream media, if you're reading their stories this morning, is there are people, especially in El Paso, Democrats and a few others, who have said, Mr. President, we don't want you in El Paso. Because, as people are well aware, many Democrats are trying to link the president to what happened, particularly in El Paso.
Right.
And on
because
Saturday
in
morning.
That instance, the shooter
yes.
was clearly a white supremacist.
Yes, yes. And we have to remind people, in Dayton, he was a leftist socialist
right.
and an advocate for the Democratic Party. But the media is not talking about that.
Yeah, and actually, the shooter in El Paso was a white nationalist in terms of his hatred for Mexican people, but yes. he also had leftist leanings in terms of corporations and stuff like that. Not to me, not that any of that matters, but it matters to the media.
Yes.
I mean, to me, what matters is if you're hunting Mexicans,
yes.
you're an evil person.
Yeah.
And can we not all just agree that that individual is evil without trying to politicize it?
Well, and that is what the mainstream media and many Democrats, including those Democrats who are trying to be the next president of the United States, including Joe Biden.
Right.
I mean, they are trying to fit President Trump into all of this, that he is an instigator of hatred in this country.
Yes.
That's basically what they're trying to do. Well, this morning before he left the White House, the president, as usual, talked to reporters who were lined up outside. And, you know, he was asked by a reporter, what do you say to your critics that believe it's your rhetoric that's emboldened white nationalists and inspiring this anger? And this is what the president had to say. Cut number 10, Brent.
What do you say to your critics that believe it's your rhetoric that is emboldening white nationalists and inspiring this anger?
So my critics are political people. They're trying to make points. In many cases, they're running for president and they're very low in the polls. A couple of them in particular, very low in the polls. If you look at Dayton, that was the person that supported, I guess you would say, Bernie Sanders, I understood. Antifa, I understood. Elizabeth Warren, I understood. Had nothing to do with President Trump. So these are people that are looking for political gain. I don't think they're getting it. And as much as possible, I've tried to stay out of that.
So that was the president responding, as you heard, to that question from a reporter. And he's saying, you know, I have nothing to do with this. And we have to go back to Monday, when the president made his first statement, formal statement, with regards to what happened in those two shootings on the weekend. And he was very clear in what he had to say. He called out white supremacy and that there's no room for this kind of thing in this country. But, you know, when the narrative of the left is the president is a hater, that the president is racist, they take this opportunity, they believe is an opportunity, to try to link him to what's going on in our country. But we really probably don't have to remind our listeners that mass shootings took place long before Donald Trump became president of the United States.
Right.
And hatred was well alive in this country long before the president came to the White House.
Yeah.
You know, it seems amazingly unfair to link President Trump to either of these shootings. After all, the shooter in Dayton had expressed support at one point for Elizabeth Warren. Should we then blame Elizabeth Warren or say that she is somehow complicit in what happened in Dayton? Well, the notion is absurd. these two men were acting on their own accord, and probably both were suffering from some kind of mental illness. It's really dirty politics, guys. Real dirty politics to drag the president in and try to make him the try to say that something he said caused those shootings. It's simply not true.
And listen, I disagree with the politics of Elizabeth Warren, but I don't believe for a minute she supported the actions of or encouraged the actions of the shooter in Dayton, Ohio. I mean, I don't believe that. But those on the left, I don't guess this is just a cynical effort to score political points. I guess they actually believe that the president is triggering these people because he's opposed to illegal immigration, not immigrants, not Mexicans, just illegal immigration across the southern border. And listen, I think it's clear. We mentioned this earlier in the week. I think it's clear that what we're hearing from the presidential candidates of the Democratic Party, that this is their case that they're making to the American people in the run-up to the 2020 election. President Trump is a racist, and if you support him, you're a racist too. Mm-hmm.
That's it exactly.
All
well,
right, what else we got?
Not to be outdone at all by some of the other politicians, there is a congressman I think where most people are familiar with from San Antonio, Joaquin Castro.
Right.
Now, his brother, Julian Castro, is one of the Democrat candidates. But in the last few days, Joaquin Castro has done what has become known as doxing. And what he has done is publish the names of people who live there in San Antonio, the names of people, the names of businesses, their home addresses, et cetera, et cetera. He's published them and said, these are the people. These are the people who are supporting President Trump. In fact, what he says in his tweet, he said the donors were fueling, I'm quoting here, quote, fueling a campaign of hate that labels Hispanic immigrants as invaders. End quote.
That is just a lie. I wish I had a nickel for every time I've called these folks liars.
Mm-hmm.
Because I could retire. That is a lie. That is not what the president has been saying. He is opposed to illegal immigration. I just said that.
Illegal
immigration. Right. But here's the thing. What we are witnessing since the election of Donald Trump is the radicalization of the Democratic Party, call it Trump derangement syndrome, whatever you want to call it, the radicalization of the Democratic Party into an entity that is becoming more and more about lies and intimidation.
Mm-hmm.
Because, Ray, again, you're the more even-tempered person probably on the panel here, but to me, there's only one reason to dox somebody, and that is to imply that you want these people intimidated, just like Mitch McConnell had people show up at his house in Kentucky and start screaming things at him while he and his wife were at home. That's why you publish their address, and that's why you publish their business name, so that people show up and yell and scream and threaten and intimidate Trump donors. Do you think I'm exaggerating?
Well, no. It in fact, in this case, Ed, what you're saying is, it's not just true, it's obviously true. There would be no reason to publish the names of these. By the way, these are law-abiding Texas citizens. These are not criminals. These are not crooks. These are not people who have been accused of anything. They have simply donated to President Trump or to the Republican Party and have given whatever the maximum limit is. So now you publish the name of the business, the owners, you publish their address, you publish their phone number if you've got it. So what do you think is going to happen? You're going to have people showing up. If it's a home address, going to show up at home. If it's a business address, you're going to show up there. It is simply inciting trouble. I don't want to say just violence, but inciting people to act against those. This is anti-democratic intimidation. It's against the spirit of what America is supposed to be.
Well, you know, it's part of a campaign on the left in this country. The word haters is thrown around a lot, but you know, you could make an argument that the left is leading some kind of campaign of hate. I don't think you're exaggerating when you come to that assessment. I believe the mainstream media. I believe, you know, social media. I believe some Democrats. I'm not going to accuse all Democrats, but they are out there and they want America to hate this president.
Right.
I mean, and I think you said it a few moments ago, Ed. This is all they've got to go to the people on next
right.
year. They can't complain about the economy. They can't
right.
complain about unemployment rate. They can't complain about he didn't keep his promises. He is trying to secure the border. That
right.
was one promise.
Right.
He's the most pro-life president that we've seen in a long time, and he loves Israel. So they can't complain about those things. So they're trying to paint him as a hater. This morning on Fox and Friends, Donald Trump Jr. responded to this campaign by walking Castro to docks to reveal to the public the donors' names and home addresses. This is cut number four.
That list sort of screams like the Dayton, Ohio shooters list. Right. When a radical left wing politician who's polling at about 0% does this for either attention or a call to action, when the fringe crazies on both sides, and we saw that in the last week, right? You had fringe crazies on all sides. They see that, man, you're going after ordinary citizens, people who just are taking part in a political process. Honestly, imagine I did that. Imagine I put a list of, you know, Joaquin Castro's donors. Now, our people don't weaponize. Good point. Mm-hmm. Our people don't weaponize the political system, you know, the same way. We don't do the organized boycotts that the left does and these kind of things. But publishing these people's their place of work, trying to maybe their bosses see it, maybe their bosses have a different, you know, they're literally trying to punish these individuals.
Who was that?
That was Donald Trump Jr.
Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
President's son. And to the point also, Laura Ingraham last night on Fox, she really laid out how the Democrats are trying to use the shootings for political gain. Cut number one.
In the last 24 hours, the left's smears and attacks have become more ghoulish, more vicious, and more unhinged. With the help of prominent media collaborators, they've launched what I think is basically a three-pronged assault designed to, number one, profit from the massacres through political fundraising. Number two, raise their public profiles in a competitive campaign season. And number three, target and silence their political opponents through defamation and demonization.
Yeah, so there you have it. I think
she's exactly right.
Yeah, she is.
I don't think there's a single exaggeration in what Laura Ingle just said.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Ed, I've got a question from a legal point of view. When these names are released, I guess, first of all, are the names of all political donors public record? And is there anything illegal about what this guy did by releasing those names?
No, I don't think so. I think they are a matter of public record because when you give to a political campaign, I mean, this is all, you know, according to the regulations of the Federal Election Commission, I think it's called the FEC. And so these... In fact, political candidates have to report all that kind of information. Let me tell you something. There was a move at one time to require nonprofits like American Family Association to do the same thing.
Yes.
And we and other groups fought that to make sure that the identity of our donors was protected because they would turn. Can you imagine the homosexual movement getting a hold of the names and addresses of people who gave to, quote-unquote, a hate group like AFA. Listen, there's nothing illegal about it, but it is the intent, I think, the intent of people who do it to intimidate and silence. Just like Laura Ingle said, what's going to happen one day is that someone is going to wind up getting hurt.
Yes.
When people show up, and then... In a court of law, maybe the people who do the doxing get challenged. You know, were you inciting people to harm those who are your political opponents?
And this is, you know, political toing and froing is, there's nothing new in this. I mean, stones being thrown back and forth between politicians. But, you know, let's go back to the 2016 election campaign. Hillary Clinton. She went after the supporters of Donald Trump.
Right.
Basket of deplorables.
Yep. Irredeemable.
Yes.
He said.
All right. So the Democrats have put it up a notch over the last several years. Not only are we going to attack our political opponents directly.
Right.
The guy who's running against me for president. But I want to demonize. It actually started with Barack Obama. Let's go way back.
Yeah.
You know. The people who cling to their guns and their Bibles.
Right.
When he was caught on tape saying that during that election campaign.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there has been a campaign by the left in particular to demonize anybody who supports. To go back to the Joaquin Castro doxing, revealing this information. You're right. There's nothing illegal about that because it is public information. But I go back to what he said about these people. That these people, these donors, were fueling a campaign of hate that labels Hispanic immigrants as invaders. He wants his motivation, his reason for publishing this, I want you to hate these people too.
Right.
I mean, that has to be the motivation.
Well, and if you just, Ray, if you're just making a point about right. people who support Donald Trump, you can make that point and you can give your opinion about what these people are like. But when you take that additional step of putting their publicizing their addresses or their businesses, you are implicitly asking for some sort of retaliation. I'm not saying you're necessarily calling for violence, but right. you want their right. businesses to fail. You want your supporters to show up at their homes like they did, like I said, to Mitch McConnell. You want that to happen because you don't. What you want is for people to stop giving to Donald Trump so that their name doesn't wind up and their address publicized too.
Well, and Ed, let's face it. There are some. I mean, it's a minority, I know, but there are some deeply disturbed people in our society. We've seen it in El Paso. We've seen it in Dayton, whose the darkness has filled their minds. And so, you know, so some people are going to see the list and ignore it. Other people are going to say, well, I'm going to go down there and shout for a while. But eventually, Fred, something bad is going to happen. When you play politics at this kind of gutter level, something bad is bound to happen because you truly are. You are stirring things up. You are, Ed, I agree that you're right. You're not literally encouraging violence, but it's just a few short steps from doxing people to somebody unbalanced doing something that is heinous, illegal, and life-changing.
Yeah, and then you can say, well, I didn't want them to harm anybody. Mm-hmm. I
never intended this.
Right. Maxine Waters, she said, hey, if you see someone, a Trump supporter at a restaurant or anywhere, get a group together, get in their face, and push back. Well, she could say what I meant was push back politically. But when you're asking people to gather in a crowd around a Trump supporter, and we saw members of his administration harassed out of restaurants, okay? When you get a gathering of people who are angry, who are shouting, who are already radicalized, violence, like you said, Ray, is just a step away.
It's pretty scary.
It is scary.
When you start to think of that.
And you know, there's all kinds of, I'm looking at Drudge now. Earlier today, I read about a new movie called The Hunt. It is from Universal Studios. And the ads, no, it's called Hunting at the Manor, I think. But I'm also seeing The Hunt. Anyway, I had never heard of this movie. It is about elitists at the manor. This is a huge game reserve who hunt, okay, you ready, folks? Who hunt conservatives.
What?
Yes, they hunt conservatives. I'm looking at The Hollywood Reporter, said the ads pulled for gory Universal thriller The Hunt in wake of mass shootings. And this is a movie in which elites stalk, quote, deplorables. Now, this is sick.
Yeah.
This is a real movie, you're saying.
This is a real movie. I watched the trailer. This is a real movie. The ads were pulled off ESPN, for example, because of the shootings this weekend. But it is from producer Jason Blum. Follows a dozen MAGA types who wake up in a clearing and realize they're being stalked for sport by elite liberals.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good night.
This is scary stuff, folks. All right. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to have Abraham Hamilton III here to talk about some legal issues. Join us.
Next time on Today's Issues, our guest will be Abraham Hamilton III.
I believe if the Lord would move us to repentance and that we would begin to exalt him and worship him and discharge faithfulness to him within the context of our family, I think we could see a radical change in our nation.
Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio and on Facebook.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. You know, one of the days that we're in Israel on our March tour, we will be going to Bethlehem. Now, when we go to Bethlehem, we'll be visiting what's called the Church of the Nativity. And the Church of the Nativity is over the place where Jesus Christ was born. And so we're going to be seeing that very place and experiencing the place where Jesus Christ was born in Bethlehem. And then later, we'll be seeing the shepherd's fields later that same day. So it's going to be a wonderful time. That's just one day in our trip to Israel. For more information on this March 12th through the 20th trip to the Holy Land, go to our website, twholyland.com. That's twholyland.com.
Fox News Commentary with Todd Starnes.
Democrats play the name and shame game. That story next.
What do you see for the next generation? Do you see a prospering nation? Do you see hope? The future is ours to create, and Liberty University is driven to train positive influencers for our country and our culture. Our mission is to guide students toward leadership as servants of the people, defenders of freedom, and champions of truth. Discover how you can impact the next generation of Champions for Christ by texting GIVE to 839-858.
For a good while now, I've been concerned Democrats would eventually start targeting supporters of President Trump. And now my fears have been realized. Congressman Joaquin Castro of Texas posted a list of prominent Trump donors on Twitter. The congressman is also chairman of his brother's presidential campaign. He outed 44 San Antonio donors, publishing their names and places of employment, accusing them of fueling a campaign of hate against Hispanic immigrants. Republicans immediately accused Democrats of naming and shaming private citizens, targeting them for their political views. The Trump presidential campaign slammed Castro, suggesting to the Daily Caller the Democrats were inciting violence, and called the congressman's actions reckless and irresponsible. I told you folks, buckle up. It's going to be a long and nasty presidential campaign. I'm Todd Starnes.
That's your Fox News commentary.
This is today's issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of today's issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of today's issues.
And welcome back to today's program. You're listening to today's issues on American Family Radio Network. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman this week. I am joined in studio by Fred Jackson, news director for American Family News and One News Now, and Ray Pritchard, founder of Keep Believing Ministries. Folks, I told you at the top of the program that I would kind of tease what we're doing next week. Most of you who have listened to American Family Radio, talk radio for a long time, realize that we yearly have a National Truth for Youth Bible Week that is a combination of AFR and Revival Fires International. They're the ones who drive. This is their Truth for Youth Bible Week, Revival Fires International. And so the both of us would like to invite you to help us get the Word of God into our nation's public schools. Now, next week, we are giving every student between the ages of 13 and 18 an opportunity to receive a free Truth for Youth Bible if they promise to pass it along to a friend in school. This is absolutely legal and constitutional. It is a great effort. The goal is to help get the Word of God back into the public schools via students. Thousands of young people have received Christ, more than 25,000 people as a result of this annual project. So next week, tune in and help us give away thousands of free Bibles to teens. For more information, visit afr.net. All right. Well, on Wednesdays, when we can and when he is available, we have Abraham Hamilton III on with us, and he is today. He's public policy analyst and general counsel for American Family Association, and he is host of the Hamilton Corner, heard weekdays at 5:05 p.m. Central Time on American Family Radio, most days on my way home. I listen to Abe. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. And thank you for listening on your way home.
Most days. Yeah, most days.
What happens on those days when you're not listening?
I will freely admit there are some days when I've had enough. Not of you, Abe, of just the culture war. Although I will say this, for the most part, you begin your program, the first segment, with
first
preaching.
Segment.
I say that about everything. Mm-hmm. It's always fantastic. You're a fine Bible teacher. You're a pastor as well as what you do here. So, folks, if you want some encouragement before he gets to the hard stuff, tune in at 5:05 and you'll get a short sermon that will encourage you. All right, we have some issues to bring up, try to get Abe's opinion.
Yeah, a lot of talk in the media over the last several days in the wake of the tragedies on the weekend, and people saying what we need in this country is what they're referring to as red flag gun laws. Mm. And basically it's create laws that if you believe somebody's behavior constitutes a potential danger to the public.
Or even mental state.
Or mental state, that you should report it to authorities. That you'd have a legal obligation. I'm getting some of the people are talking. You'd have a legal obligation to go to authorities and say, I think Joe over here, I think he's acting a little strange. It's what he said the other day.
And then what happens?
And then what happens?
Yeah, I talked about this on the program last night. What would happen at that point is that the authorities, and to be more specific, there are 17 states right now that have these so-called red flag laws. Prior to the Parkland tragedy, there were only 5 states. So just in short order, 12 additional states passed laws similar to these. Each state has some slight differences between them. The most egregious, in my opinion, is California's, where, using the hypothetical you presented, Fred, is that if there's a concern about Joe, no one even talks to Joe. They just go to a court and say, hey, Joe has some issues. We think he's off his rocker. We think he's a little bit unstable, and I know he has guns. So you need to go send someone there to go and take Joe's guns. And in California, what would happen is a court would sign an order allowing law enforcement to go and take Joe's guns. Now, Joe has not had an opportunity to confront his accuser. Joe has not received any due process of laws. But Joe could, for all intents and purposes, be compelled by the state authorities to submit his firearms.
Okay, so police would show up and just tell Joe he has to hand over his guns?
And it would take Joe's guns. And different states have different time periods. Some have 6 months. Some have a year. Some would take the guns and never return them. No physical financial compensation, anything like that. So you are literally traipsing over, you know, Second Amendment, Fourth Amendment, Fifth Amendment, Sixth Amendment, Eighth Amendment. I mean,
have these laws. Now, let me just say that in the wake of these tragic shootings in El Paso, Texas, and Dayton, Ohio over the weekend, there is talk that Republicans are also coalescing around a national approach to this, federal approach.
A federal red flag law. And I shared this on the show yesterday. Mitch McConnell has gathered with Roger Wicker from Mississippi, Lamar Alexander from Tennessee, and Lindsey Graham from South Carolina to try to craft some manner of gun control response to these shootings. Senator John Thune of South Dakota has come out saying he supports it. Marco Rubio is one who is in favor of these types of laws. And so there is momentum. Unless President Trump hears from his base, there is momentum among Republicans to pass this legislation. And it's one of those things that it's my opinion that President Trump's instincts lead more towards gun control than he does against it. Remember following Parkland, the debacle with the bump stocks and things of that nature. And so these red flag laws, just as you guys have pointed out, would set the stage that would allow law enforcement authorities. In some states, you have to make the initial report to police officers or the district attorney's office, and they would petition the court for the order to take the guns. But it would deprive you of your property without due process of laws and without an opportunity to confront the people who are saying that you need to be liberated from your guns.
Wow.
Well, listen, this seems unconstitutional on its face. Have any of these laws been challenged on Second Amendment, Fourth Amendment grounds, anything?
Not to date. And because most of the laws are relatively recent, as I said, 12 states passed them following the Parkland tragedy. So there hadn't been challenges that have matriculated all the way up through the court system yet. But should a federal red flag law be adopted, I think you would see a challenge almost immediately. Most of the states that have adopted them, you can probably expect it that generally speaking, they're in more, you know, secular progressive states. Although there are a couple of states, I had some callers yesterday, were surprised to know that they had red flag laws in their states and they didn't even know about it.
Wow. So, Abe, what kind of things would be reported? I mean, I'm just thinking to myself, somebody who doesn't like President Trump, I mean, and it could have been President Obama, it really doesn't matter, but whoever the president is that somebody who doesn't like the president and is saying he's going to come to town, we need to get rid of him, is that enough to get yourself reported? Or does it have to be, I've got a gun, I'm going to shoot this guy next week when he comes to town? How specific does the threat have to be?
And that belies what I think is some of the most unconstitutional concerns about the matter. As it stands, most states, they have to be some type of communication of a willingness to harm oneself, you know, suicidal ideation, or some overt threat or a communication of a threat to do something to someone else. But the subjective nature of that reporting element is a part of the reason why, in my opinion, it's clearly unconstitutional. And in addition to that, is rife for abuse. You know, you'll have people who just don't like one another reporting one another and even making up things, especially
husbands and wives who were getting divorced.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
He threatened me.
Yeah.
And the fact of the matter is that with these laws, like you said, there is no opportunity to defend yourself.
No.
You can't say, I never said that.
No.
And nobody has to prove that you said it.
That's right. It's a presumption of guilt until innocence is proven. The exact reverse of what our Constitution affords.
Well, this is what I hate. The only thing I hate about having Abe on is that we blow through our time. And we've got three or four things we want to talk to him about.
Mm-hmm. So, a nice way of saying I talk too much. Thank you.
No, because I think some of our people are hearing about this, these red flag laws, and they're thinking, well, obviously, if there's somebody who's got mental illness, you don't want them having a gun that hurt themselves or someone else. I might be in favor of that. And we probably all be in favor of that if we could trust the left to respect the Second Amendment, but we don't. So I think our folks want to hear about this, and boy, we're going to be hearing about it in the days ahead because Congress is going to be talking about it. Let's go with one more issue for Abe. We'd like to keep him on for a half an hour, but we can't.
All right, California. They have just passed into law. Governor out there, Newsom, signed it last week, the Presidential Tax Transparency and Accountability Act. All right? What does it say? It says that a president must reveal 5 years, I think, worth of tax returns, make those public, or his name cannot be on the ballot. Now, the White House is challenging this, but talk to us about, I've never heard anything like this before, Abe. In fact, the former governor of California vetoed this.
That's Jerry Brown.
In 2017.
Said it was unconstitutional.
Yes. Said it was unconstitutional, but yes. Gavin Newsom, hey, let's go for it.
Yeah, and to be clear, it would prevent the president's name from being included on the primary election ballot, not the general election.
Okay.
But regardless, it is, you know, one thing about regressives, they hate the Constitution. You know, a state cannot unilaterally add qualification requirements for the office of the presidency. I mean, you can't do that. It is an extra constitutional additional requirement just because California's legislature has decided, well, we want to add this additional qualification for the office of the presidency. The reason why you've never heard of anything like this before, Fred, is because Article 2, Section 1 of the United States Constitution clearly lays out the criteria for the qualifications for the office of the presidency in the United States of America. They don't like the president, so they want to try to frustrate his efforts to be reelected. But to me, that shows that they're kind of afraid. I mean, if you're confident that your state won't vote for the president, why would you try to exclude him from the ballot? Of course, we know this is really a political stunt in an effort to try to get them to force the president to reveal his tax returns. But this is unconstitutional on its face. And I would argue when you have a body of elected officials and a chief executive of a state that are so willing to blatantly trample the Constitution for rank political purposes, I think that calls into question their fitness for office.
Well, and that's what Jerry Brown said when he vetoed this the last time, is he said, basically, I'm paraphrasing.
Jerry Brown is no friend of the president.
No, he's an ultra-liberal,
exactly.
but he recognizes not only the unconstitutional nature of this law, but the potential for abuse. Because
yes.
He says, what else are you going to ask for? When President Obama was running for re-election, I always wanted to see the college papers that he wrote to try to get a little bit more of a glimpse into his thinking about America and the Constitution and communism, socialism, those kinds of things. What if a state like Texas or another conservative state, I'm not sure Texas is conservative, as conservative anymore, but you take a conservative state that says, if you want to be on the ballot in this state, you've got to release your college term papers. I mean, it could literally, would have no end. And you are adding to what the Constitution lays out as the only requirements for running for president.
And I think doing that makes a mockery of the electoral process. It makes a mockery of legislators and legislation. It makes a mockery of the gubernatorial office. How can you take them seriously going forward when you know these guys are doing this? They know it's not constitutional. They're going to try to say, oh, we think it's constitutional. They know it's not constitutional, but they want to do it anyway, just in an effort to make a political statement.
Well, one of the ones who said it is constitutional, Erwin Chemerinsky, I think is the dean of the law school at UCLA or something.
It is so hilarious. Yeah. My con law textbook was written by Erwin Chemerinsky.
Erwin Chemerinsky was an assistant debate coach when I was on the Boston College debate team.
And it's the Constitution law book that did not include any references to the actual Constitution.
I just want to pull my hair around. My head's spinning around, folks, if you want to watch that on Facebook or YouTube. So, all right, Abraham Hamilton III. Folks, tune in tonight at 5:05 p.m. Central Time on American Family Radio for the Hamilton Corner. Abe knocks it out of the park every night, at least the nights I've been listening. So, all right, Abe, thank you.
You guys
appreciate it. All right. Well, listen, I just feel dirty right now. I feel dirty, all this stuff. I got to get clean. How about some Redeem Clean? How's that for a transition to our next guest? We want to welcome Lynn Ingram of Redeem Clean. Lynn, what'd you think of that transition?
Great segue. I have never heard it better. Thank you.
That's right.
That was beautiful.
It was beautiful, and I encourage you, Lynn, to get the podcast and download that, and you can listen to that transition as often as you want. So,
could I have advertising rights to that, please?
Yes, you can. Yes, you can.
You can
have it.
Will there be a royalty due on that?
Well, let's. If you want to talk, if you want to talk numbers, we can.
Okay. 64 ounces of Redeem Clean liquid. How's that?
Yeah, that sounds good to me, brother. Hey, listen, folks.
You got it.
If you want, I'm going to ask Lynn a question. We try to ask him a question once a week. Go to afastore.net. You can click through. You'll see the little box for Redeem Clean. It is a way not only to clean your clothes. I can't guarantee you can clean the slime off you after political one-upsmanship, but you can get your clothes clean, and you can help the Ministry of American Family Association. All right, Lynn, here is your question for today.
Yes, sir.
Which product, liquid or powder, works best? And here's why I ask it, Lynn, because I love doing the laundry at our house. And no, that's not
for
true.
Real?
That is not true. But I didn't even know there were such things as liquid detergent for a long time, and certainly didn't know there were pods or any of those kind of things. So I want to know which cleans better, liquid or powder.
Well, first of all, there are so many machines out there today that are that are high efficiency compatible. I mean, they're high efficiency machines, and what that basically means is they just use lower water levels for the environment. The problem is it's harder to get them clean. If you don't lift and suspend the dirt, the grunge, the grime, the sweat, and other stuff off of the clothes, and there's not enough water in there to rinse it off, guess where all that stuff goes? Right back on those clothes. So I think that's the number one deal. Always use enough water, no matter what kind of machine that you have, for to get the action in the wheel of the machine and also to lift and suspend it. If you will look on the aisles today of most grocery stores and other places, big box stores, the vast majority of the detergents are liquid. There's a couple of reasons for that. Number one is they're water-based, and they can dilute them so far. And they're more profitable, to be honest with you. We have taken a different approach to that and used we've used more chemical and less water, more active ingredients in there and less water. That's why when you hold ours up, it is so thick and so rich. In a commercial environment, we like powder soap. Powder just seems to do better for us in our commercial environment. It does have a salt base that they use for a filter there. It cleans, but also has a tendency to fade them just a little bit too. But that's why most liquid cleaners today are water, because they can dilute them and make it just go so much further. Does that make sense?
It does. So let me just ask you a quick follow-up question, and then we'll let you go, Lynn. Sure. All the Redeem Clean products, are they compatible with high-efficiency washers?
Every one of them. And we encourage whatever you like, whatever you're used to, powder, liquid, our softeners, our spotters, whatever, they all work in either machine. Yes, sir.
Okay. All right, folks, go to afastore.net and click on the icon for Redeem Clean. You can not only get these great cleaning products, but you can also help the Ministry of American Family Association and American Family Radio. You're going to clean your clothes anyway. You Amen. Might as well help us out, too, at the same time. Hey, Lynn, thank you, brother. Appreciate
it. Ed, thank you. We love AFA, AFR. We want to encourage you. Just keep doing what you do. We love you guys.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate
thank
it.
You.
All right.
See you soon.
Bye. All right. All right, that's Lynn Ingram, but him, Jim Duncan, are just such great guys. They wanted to help the Ministry of American Family Association. So they created this product. They've been in the cleaning business for 50 years, and we just wanted to help AFA and AFR. Mm-hmm. It's been a wonderful partnership. All right, what do we got?
Well, let's talk about everybody's favorite FBI agent, Peter Strzok.
Oh, man, I love that guy.
Well, he's former now.
Yes,
and
right,
he's, and he's upset. He's really
no,
upset.
No way.
Yeah, he's launched a lawsuit. Anyway, Peter Strzok, you may remember him. His name was mentioned frequently over the last year because he and his fellow agent, girlfriend that he was having an affair with, because he was married, yes. Lisa Page, one of the things that evolved over the last year in the midst of the investigation, various investigations, was during the 2016 election campaign, he was really hoping that Hillary Clinton would win. And at the same time, in his communication email, using his FBI computer, he and his friend Lisa Page were talking about how much they didn't want Trump to win the election.
Right.
In fact, there were some emails that indicated perhaps their dislike for Donald Trump was a little bit more widespread, that there was a campaign within the Justice Department /FBI to get rid of Donald Trump, not get rid of in the fatal sense, that ensure that he doesn't win.
Right.
And in fact, he ended up initially on the Mueller team investigating Russian collusion.
And was in charge of the investigation of Hillary Clinton,
yes,
who he politically supported.
And kind of he wrote the document that said, hey, she's not guilty long before interviewing her. You know, this on and on and on right. It goes. Well, because all of these emails were made public, he got fired. All right. Well, now he is firing back. He has launched a lawsuit against the FBI saying that they gave in to what he calls in the lawsuit unrelenting pressure of the president. So he's blaming the president, but he's suing the FBI. Anyway, this morning on Fox and Friends, Trey Gowdy, who a former congressman from South Carolina, right. who's a prosecutor. He's now a Fox News contributor. He doesn't think the Strzok lawsuit has much of a chance at all. Cut number three.
He said Clinton, someone who was he was investigating at the time, he said Clinton should win $100 to nothing. He belittled Trump supporters. He promised to stop the presidency. He said he had an insurance policy. If that didn't fail, and the one that I keep bringing up that undercuts and impeaches his comment that he never took official action, remember when he said he wasn't interested in joining the Russia probe because he didn't think it would result in impeachment? This is a counterintelligence career FBI agent where what Russia did to this country was not enough for him. That's not enough to get him interested. He wanted it to involve impeachment. So if he's going to start suing people that fired him, he needs to start with Mueller.
So there you have it. That's Trey Gowdy. He doesn't think this lawsuit has much of a chance, but I guess we shouldn't be surprised in the environment that we're in today that Peter Strzok thinks he has a chance to win this.
And you know, Ray, this is why I said I needed some Redeem Clean, just to clean the slime off.
Right. Well, Ed, from a legal point of view, does he have a chance? Maybe the answer is it depends on what judge he gets or what court he, you know, who's going to decide the case. But does he have a case here?
Well, I'm going to have to side with – I'm going to have to go with Trey Gowdy simply because I don't know. I would guess that the FBI has some pretty strict regulations about how agents are to conduct themselves, especially because – FBI agents, for the most part, usually stay in their positions when the occupant of the White House changes.
Right.
So there's probably some very strict guidelines on how you are to communicate, whether or not you can show bias. Because, let's face it, if you're going to be a part of the FBI, the federal government's investigation arm, you have got to have the appearance of being unbiased. Because if it appears that the FBI is using its enormous power to punish politicians or those who support them, then the American people will lose all confidence in the FBI, and the FBI then suffers for that. So I'm going to go with Trey Gowdy because I don't know what those regulations are. I'm just guessing that's the way it works. Well, and if Trey Gowdy says there's nothing here, but to your point, Ray, I don't know whether you can find a judge. You can find a judge now,
right,
anywhere at any time, sure, federal judge, to rule in any way you choose.
Listen, for no other reason, they did all this email exchanging on their company, the FBI computers.
Right.
This was being done at work.
Yes.
Right. All right?
Right.
So it'd be one thing if he was fired for personal communication on his personal cell phone with his girlfriend.
Right.
You know, but they were doing this in the course of their work on their FBI computers,
right,
doing this kind of thing. So if for no other reason, I mean, if Ed, if you and I were doing something, you know, private business on our own, you know, AFA computers.
Let's say you and I were watching the Boston Bruins play the Chicago Blackhawks.
Now wait a minute.
And you and I were watching, just as an example, and we're emailing back and forth on AFA's computers.
That can't be wrong.
While at work.
Surely that's not wrong.
That's not going to end well. All right. Anyway, folks, let me just tell you something. You get Redeem Clean to clean your clothes, and you get the blood of Jesus to clean your soul.
Amen. That's right.
Because politics is a nasty business. It is
and
not
watch
for
hockey on your own time.
Yes, that's right. It's not for the faint at heart. Neither. Politics or hockey. Not for the faint at heart. All right. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'll tell you what we're going to do, folks. We're going to do what we always do coming up to 11 o'clock Central Time. We're going to take a 5-minute break for news. And when we come back, we have a great short little segment about what's happening with some of our public schools, and then Steve Jordahl will be here.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.